Hey, Pam, in the morning. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? Smells like...
The... Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, we're back, Sox and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Matt Byrne on the board. We have Greg Pappas in the studio. Should have Mr. John Flanagan on a bit, who I actually saw this weekend down at our reunion in South Bend. And he's looking good. Hopefully he'll be on today sounding good. Interesting weekend, Greg. The amount of money that is pouring into these universities, some of them, is so dramatic it's scary. But let's talk about your favorite stock first. Is GameStop? What do you? What's going on here? I've got it up $20, which is 20%. Oh man!
Wait a second. $20 is 100%.
Well,
or it was
95. 90. It was started 23. Now it's 43. Not exaggerated, it's almost doubled, you know, almost.
Yeah,
just saying. So
lots stock of tweets.
Stock last year was a penny, but since Roaring Kitty says he's got a bunch of it, and nobody who's buying here even knows who the bleep Roaring Kitty is yet, because it's got momentum and it's overnight and there's nobody in the way, the stock could trade 200. What's the difference, right?
I think he did put his money where his mouth was.
How would you know? I'm not saying...
Supposedly, his account has a huge amount of the open interest of the 20 calls.
The guy put his account statement online?
I don't know.
Something along those lines?
Yeah.
Well, why would anybody believe that?
It's not uncommon in that circle. You know, Discord, Reddit, those guys, they're very public with their P&L. They sometimes call it loss porn, too, when it doesn't go their way.
All right, so the guy allegedly has, 120,000 call options? Now, when I was in the business, the position limit was 2,500. Now the guy can have 120,000?
Well, you know, it probably wasn't, when he started buying, it probably wasn't that expensive, the 20,000.
But even so, I mean, 120,000.
But that's, 12 million shares, so 20 bucks overnight. Yeah, that's not bad.
But the problem is, if he tries to sell them, who's he going to sell them to?
He's probably going to keep going with the options.
Well, what I'm saying is there how deep and liquid is this market? I guess is my question. Now it's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, definitely not liquid at 6 o'clock in the morning. Definitely not liquid at
Well, do you think it's time?
I think last night it was trading 27.
I'm saying you think it's time to stop this crap and actually trade from 8:30 to 3, and it's plenty of time for people when the markets are quote open.
Well, I think that the exchanges won't let that happen, and I don't think that the people really want that. I think they want as much.
They want this to happen?
I think so.
Well, some people do. I mean, I'm just
It's similar to what happened with at least the grain markets that I trade. You know, those were the best hours in the history of work, meaning you worked from 9 in the morning till 1 p.m., and that was it. It was closed to the rest of the world. And eventually that, which was you know, started in the 1850s, that those hours, and I think, what, in 2010 or 2012, they eventually moved to overnight hours. So that was the last hope for people who wanted to only trade certain periods.
Well, I guess,
of time.
You know, I'm not, you know, as you know, I'm not grilling you. I'm just saying, before you have a system, before you have hours, before you have payment mechanisms, before you have everything, you need to have a goal. And what is your goal exactly? Not yours personally, but what is the goal of the markets? Is the goal of the markets to absolutely make money for the favored few because you can get yourself time to where everybody can absolutely get screwed? Or, well, let me ask you this.
A long-term investor would say it doesn't matter.
What is a long-term investor?
I would say the person who's, you know, buying maybe once a month or once every quarter, they're indifferent to these types of things. Meaning,
well, if you're a long-term investor in GameStop,
I don't think many long-term investors are.
If you were and you bought it at 17 the other day for the long term, if you don't sell this morning or something really, your long term just got short term.
Yeah, maybe, but I wouldn't count on the exchanges taking away hours.
I wouldn't count on them either because their motivation is absurd.
I mean, motivation is the same as everyone else. Capitalism
okay,
is money.
But I'm saying if you want something legit, the idea is
legit is subjective.
Okay, but if you want something, I would say legit. If I'll use my subjective, so legit. The idea is to have a fair and orderly market where most of the trade is customer to customer, in my opinion. And I traded in the OEX pit, and I thought it was the most legit pit in the world because over 60% of the trades were customer to customer.
Yeah, now that's probably mostly Citadel and Wolverine.
Yeah. So the object is not to have some...
But the spreads are way down, and the volumes
way up. What do you
think
the spreads are in GameStop right now?
Well, they're a lot less than they would have been in before.
Why do you say that?
I would imagine that all of the spreads, no matter what, have been compressed.
Where do you even have standing orders in the middle of the night? They don't have any standing, do they?
Well, not standing, but you can have orders in.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to put a limit in, that's...
If we had an order in GameStop from yesterday or from Friday, I don't think it participates here until the market opens.
No, you can trade after hours.
I understand that, but it's a different system.
A different system. Well, the equities are so much different than the futures.
Meaning
there's multiple exchanges and dark pools. So whereas with the futures, we only really have like 3-4. Equities have, call it 20, that are serious players. And
they're not serious. Here's my point: I'm not grilling you. You're looking at the world today, and I'm saying if you were to design a system, you would like if when people do trades, okay, I'm talking about on the equity side. If you buy 100 shares of IBM, you're buying it from quote somebody normally.
Yeah.
Well, that the idea is if Greg Pappas puts in, where's IBM trading? 166.66. It's at down 19 cents pre-open. So now if you want to sell that at 168, okay, that's fine, or 167. And if I'm sitting there, stock moves up, and I want to buy 100 shares, and all of a sudden, you should be the offer someplace, and I should buy it from you. Somebody shouldn't jump ahead by a penny and trade it with them. We're leaning on your trade. And all of a sudden, because they could trade within the penny, and you and I can't.
Well, the majority of all the orders on, at least I think, NYSE, those are internal matchups and market maker to market maker. Those guys, the retail orders are probably 20 or 30% of the market.
Well, that's my point. That's my point. That sucks.
It just is.
Well, but it doesn't just is. Somebody made a rule that said, before I trade with you at 168, somebody can come in at 167.999. and you can't trade there. Somebody else can.
Right.
That never used to happen.
Right. That never used to happen. That's what a lot of the GameStop people are angry about, meaning those people who have those privileges, people like Citadel, people like some of those hedge funds, they were frustrated with that, so they saw the opportunity to squeeze them out of position, and they went for it, and it worked. So,
well, it sounds like
that was the goal.
The goal is to take the retail person out of the market and to pay for order flow.
So when these guys got wind that one of those selected, very, very, one of the chosen ones, the hedge funds with, very cheap margin, very low transaction costs, and once they saw a way to get after them, they went for it, and they went for the throat, and I think they got them for like $2 or $3 billion.
But the idea of a market is to have all the people in the world who trade IBM, who trade corn, or trade something, to meet at a place and make a market and do your trades.
Even if they all did that, call it tomorrow, that's still the people who have the preferential rates, the preferential margin rates, and the
Nobody has preferential margin rates unless you're a dealer. In which case you need them because that's your job,
right? So the internalizers.
Well, there wouldn't be any internalizers if you actually traded with other people.
I think they'd still be there.
To a very small extent.
If the volume was similar, they'd still have the same amount of people to run in front.
Well, first of all, the volume wouldn't be similar because now you count it twice. That's what's screwed up about it. So. If you're offered at 168, I know I'm getting a little too technical there, if you're offered at 168 in IBM, and I'm talking security side, and all of a sudden, that's why if you watch your stuff, which of course we trade all day long, so that's what we do, if you see yourself offered at 168, you'll see IBM trading, and all of a sudden, it's not trading with you, then it's trading 167.999999, and the computers, the people are now leaning on you, so the minute it starts to go up, they only have a penny risk. Let me start from the beginning, Greg. You know this, but the listeners probably don't. If you trade on a trading floor, you trade now within the market. You have what they call time and place advantage. So, for instance, I had an okay account when I traded on the trading floor. It wasn't small or anything, but nobody's bigger in the market, right? It was small compared to the OEX bid. It was very small. But if all of a sudden the broker near me or in the book, I could see 200-300 of these things offered at 3/8, say, or even 500 at 3/8. I was a pretty good sized seller at 5/16, because I knew my fallback position was if I smelled a rat in a second, I could turn around and buy them at 3/8. So I assumed my risk was only 6.25, which is a 16th. So you you pin yourself to your risk because you see the whole world's at 3/8. So the 5/16 was a good sale, probably. Okay.
I think you're.
What I'm saying.
You need to break it down a little bit more.
Okay. What I'm saying is,
when you say leaning on something, that means people can see your order,
right?
And they say, "All right, well, I'm
no,
go
I
in
can
front
see
of
theirs."
Well, that's what that's the what concept
get,
of leaning.
That's what you get time and place advantage on. Okay. So, but now we have people, but I could never trade in front of that. In other words, if somebody wanted to pay 3/8, I could never say, well, 3/8 is what, 0.375, right? I could never say, oh no, I'll sell it to you 0.374.
Right, and that's what they do now.
That's what they do now, which
and
sucks.
Then they say, I'm gonna, right. But that's just what the exact same thing.
But the point
floor
is now. But the floor
only with
the people
larger
on the floor,
spreads.
Okay, but the people on the floor had no price advantage in the sense they couldn't sneak between the markets. So if I wanted to pay up from 5/16, I had to pay 3/8 and I had to take your offer.
Right.
Where now I don't. Somebody can be a penny under that, and if all of a sudden they smell a
they
rat,
could
they,
go
they
point
turn around.
Zero. They could go way smaller than
well,
pennies.
Well, no, it's a tenth of a penny or something. Can't go smaller than that, which is small enough. Well, my point being is you sit there all day long, and all of a sudden, instead of a trading 3/8, trading 5/16, I'll go back to those days. and once and when it's your turn at 3/8, you get traded with. That doesn't happen. All of a sudden now it's 3/8.
Payment for order flow has created this
this myth in the middle.
It's zero. Or it's a race to zero. So the advantages they would say would be, well, we got more volume, we got more people, and the only way to make it fair is to have
people who cheat always have find a way to tell you how it's good for you.
Right, cheating is subjective, but what happens is they start paying the brokers for their orders, and they'll say, you just send us your orders and we're going to fill them all exactly like you say, and they use those in between prices in order to make their
money. What I'm saying is you never are able to sell it at 3/8.
Right.
When it's offered at 3/8. You only sell it at 3/8.
You can't match it.
It only becomes, you only get traded with if it's now 3/8 bid or higher.
Right. So
every single trade you make, you think it's a good trade because it's it's cheap commission. Every single trade you make, we do this all day long. I mean, you will not sell it at 48 cents until it becomes 48 cent bid.
Right.
Which is different.
And Citadel, I think, does $15 billion a year worth of that, and they can take out in profit or so. Or no, in revenue they do way more, but in profit, that's ultimately after all the tech costs and staffing and all that, they still take home about 15 or 16 billion doing that.
Okay, let me explain it in very simple terms. Even if it's on the penny, it's even...
That would be a disaster for them if you changed it to... switching back to pennies.
Who cares?
Well, they're the ones paying half the fees for the exchanges.
Okay. Well, somebody will still make
probably
the trades.
Probably more.
Somebody will still make the trades. But my point being is, now you say, why would somebody do this? And then we get off this subject because it's too technical. If I know that Greg's offered it at 5 cents, and I can sell it at 4.99, my risk is a penny. I mean, it could conceivably happen that the world changed and an asteroid hit New York and there could be a movement there. But by and large, during the day, my risk is now a penny because I can buy Greg stock, and my reward is, even if it's 64 bid, I'm 99 cent the other way, right? So I'm one penny on the risk side, 99 cents on the profit side. Cents.
That's what you want to do all day long.
Well,
that's what people always have done. And before there was called these internalizers and or Citadel Securities and all that stuff, it was just the same concept, only less people, meaning the exchanges had members or preferred participants, and those that cost money, and those people were the ones who got first access. So it's how many people are participating and their cost to participate. So before, you had to be an exchange member, you had to be physically there, you had to be a certain things. Now you have to be, you have to have a lot of money up with the exchange, you have to have superior technology, meaning whether it be, at first it was fiber lines, and then it was microwave, and then there's, all sorts of very expensive infrastructure, and that's how they try to gain their structural edge, call it, from the technology and the setup with that pricing, like you were talking about, that goes sub-zero.
But you've gone far away from the concept of an exchange being a spot where people come together and buy and sell.
Yeah, and the exchange has prioritized those types of people because A, they provide them the most income, and B, they see as a way to narrow the spreads.
Well, but the more you splinter the market, the worse it is for the real participants, being you and me, and the better it is for those guys.
In theory, maybe. You could also argue that the volatility actually makes it a little bit better.
For who? For who?
For the disciplined participant, because you get a bigger swing.
I'm not talking about somebody who can take advantage of it. That
everyone can take advantage
of. Saying, who cares? Why does IBM have to trade at 3 in the morning? There's no margin calls there. There's nobody. There's a few people doing it. If it traded from 8:30 to 3, so what? If you have to wait till 8:30 and to trade your the idea is, if more people are involved, the fairer the price.
Yeah, the argument would probably be, yeah, there's more people involved because we're forcing them to be there. There's more people than there would be during the day.
Yeah.
So it's tough to, I mean, clearly it'd be nice to have everybody in the same spot, but then the Asians and the Europeans complain.
So what? They're not open you can't trade European stock in the middle of the night, or can you? I mean, who's open here to do it for you?
I think the best way to probably do stuff overnight is over with the futures, but...
Yeah, I'm not saying the S&P shouldn't trade overnight or something like that, because it's worldwide events, but really, does GameStop have to trade at 3 in the morning?
Yeah, that's the argument from New York would be, why would you prevent willing market participants from trading when that's... Why would you stop them? That's more participants.
Okay, so you think these prices, if it happened, this guy told everybody at noon today that he was, I'm saying it's a way, the idea that people have earnings when the markets are closed. I mean, when I started the business, I think most companies, well, there weren't very many companies on the, there were options companies, but they would stop trading at 10 o'clock, they would give out the earnings, they would have the conference call, and they'd start up again at 11. Why can't we do that? Why do we purposely wait until the markets are closed?
In commodities, we release the reports during the day, usually around 11.
That's what I'm saying.
We trade through the reports, so I don't know. I think if they have to pick, which they don't, I would say just leave it open for however long during the day, and maybe have the night session for, but. I don't see why you have to close it all during those.
What I'm saying with the idea is there's a piece of information that some people get earlier than others, and the object is to even it up, and my object would be. Now, if you're one of the people getting it, you're saying I paid for this right or something.
For execution, people spend through the nose for, they call it latency-sensitive strategies.
Okay, well...
But in terms of getting earnings reports and all the stuff that's matters for, say, shareholders, I don't understand why you close during that, you know, at all. But whatever.
Well, because it's an announcement from the company. It's not what's the term when they define option modeling and stuff. It's not a stream of continual information. It's a distinct piece of information that somebody's going to come out with. The idea is to have everybody get it at the same time. Or, well, let's put it this way. My idea would be to have everybody at the same time. If you get it earlier, you think you actually deserve it. that's the problem.
Yeah. An earnings report is given by the company, so if anybody's insider trading, there should be a watch for that, and I'm sure the government has some program for finding unusual, just like you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Unusual, but, you know, it's...
All right, well, S&P Futures up 90, NASDAQ Futures up 90. I'm back, Mr. John Flanagan. Maybe a couple of anecdotes from our weekend, although we'll keep that small, and we'll talk about some of the real estate stuff going on. And what do you... I'd sure like your opinion, Greg. When is all this stuff going to start to matter? I mean, some of the bad stuff, because there's obviously some really good stuff going on in the economy. Is the bad stuff ever going to matter? Somebody's buildings, what are they taking, an 80% hit on these mortgages? Where's all this money coming from, for God's sake? We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. We have Greg Pappas in the studio with Matt Byrne on the board. S&P Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 84. The Dow futures down 12. I don't see anything moving too much. Well, NVIDIA's up 31. NVIDIA's always up. We have GameStop up 18. It was up 22. It's coming back, Greg. Did you short it at 43? You're up $2 if you did. You know, a guy like you doing this kind of stuff over in Asia. We've got India stocks hit record high. So when's the last time you traded India stock? Ever?
No, I'm still stuck on GameStop. I'm not in India yet. I'm sure they can.
Well, when you take your profits here, you can buy some Indian stock. I don't even know what any of the companies over there, but maybe you could tell me.
Large growing market.
You can give a full report on stocks and jacks.
Pile in.
Nikkei up 435, 1.1%. Hang Seng up 323, 1.8%. Now, these guys were getting clobbered on Friday. They got down to almost 18,000. Now they're back up to 18,403. Amazing volatility in this Hang Seng market. And yet, Shanghai is down 8. So they. Why is that, Greg? Why is most of the action seemingly in the Hang Seng market and not in the mainland? Is the government watching everybody in the mainland or what? They're probably watching everybody in Hang Seng, too. Anyway, we'll have to get somebody to talk about that market one of these days. DAX up 132.7%, FTSE up 11.1%, CAC around up 25.3%. So we got bullishness across the board this morning on the first day of June trading. We have bonds down 5 basis points. That's probably why. 4.46, the blend down 3 basis points, 2.61. Japan down 1.06. We have oil, even with the Saudis coming out and saying, what do they call it now, OPEC Plus? It's the original sleazeballs plus Russia, right? Isn't that OPEC Plus? Greg, I think it is. Anyway, oil's up 11 cents to 77.10, so it hasn't done anything to the price. It went up near 80 and it came right back down. Brent up 19 cents, 81.06. Natural gas up a dime, 268. That's a big move. That's almost a 4% move. RBOB unchanged, 242. We've got gold up 580, 2351. So cracking the 2351. Are we going to make it 2400? We'll see. Silver up 11 cents, 3055. Copper up 4 cents, 464. Foreign exchange, dollar is 108 against the euro, where it's right where it's been. Same thing with the pound, 127. So that market has not been very volatile in a while. Bitcoin up a 1,400 bucks, 69,117. It had been going down. Now it's coming right back up. And, well, that's about it. What do we got for traffic, weather, sports? Boy, could there be less thought about this Cubs Sox two games than ever, Greg? I mean, my God. Anyway, Matt, go ahead. Give us the bad news.
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 6:38 a.m. on June 3rd, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, 62 degrees this morning, high of 81. Warmer today than yesterday with sunny skies and humidity at 82%. Down in Phoenix, 77 degrees right now with a high of 102. Hot and lots of sun. As far as sports, in the MLB yesterday, Cubs lost their home game against the Cincinnati Reds 5-2, and White Sox lost to the Milwaukee Brewers. Final score 6-3. Both lost their games yesterday. In the NHL playoff West final, Game 6 saw Edmonton Oilers win their game against Dallas Stars 2-1. This takes the Oilers to the Stanley Cup starting this Saturday, June 8th. They'll be facing off against the Florida Panthers. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
So, Greg, were you glued to that game last night?
I saw the White Sox almost got in a fight. That was pretty good.
Well, maybe they're better at that than they are at hitting it. We have Mr. Flanagan.
We do indeed.
You too. Good morning, Tom, Greg, Pat.
So, you ditched out on us yesterday. We had a nice caucus at breakfast.
Yeah, I got an earlier start than that. I was driving through the fog.
You were foggy in the fog?
Yeah.
John and I were back at our reunion, met some people we've known for a long time, so it was a good time. You'll never guess what I did on the way home.
What?
I actually drove by Kubiak's.
For you.
Yeah, how's this for a period timepiece, Greg? One of the jokes last night, or Saturday night at the dinner, was when we were in Indiana, in South Bend, Indiana was dry on Sundays, right? So we were close enough to the Michigan border that, you know, intelligent minds could find a way. There was this saloon right across the border. Literally, I think there wasn't a part of the parking lot in Indiana or something.
Indiana, yeah.
By the way, the parking lot is still not paved. After 50 years, it's still not paved. So the place was open, and... So, Greg, get a load of this. We would go on Sunday night, but Sunday night just happened to be polka night. They'd have a polka band in there. And they'd have these ladies, who are probably mostly in their late 40s, 50s, these Polish ladies, and believe me, they wanted to dance. So if you were there drinking like dollar and a half pitchers or wherever the hell they were, they would literally drag you out of your chair and make you dance. So after like several weeks, you got some kind of a hang of the polka. Nobody wanted to dance, but you had to dance, or you're getting cuffed upside the head. And they were serious. So one of the jokes was, do you realize you guys are now way older than the old ladies at Kubiak's? How was that for an insult, Greg?
That was a sobering moment.
It was a sobering moment.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, but it was a great time. They were nice. They were, but if you went, little Greg would not be able to hang in the corner. They'd find you and grab you by your beard and pull you out there.
Exactly.
And you know, it was they were great. The place, it has not changed. And it's like a timepiece. You think after all these years, you'd have paved the parking lot, for God's sake, but no.
And wasn't Michigan at the time 18 for drinking?
Might have been, but it was. We all had IDs anyway, but it didn't matter.
It was so nice to be able to drive, you know, and do it legally, although it was a dangerous thing in those days. It still is. On the road, coming back half tanked.
Except there was nobody on the road. I mean, last night one of the wives said to me, how come you always drove? You know, I mean, I probably shouldn't have, but we're four blocks from campus, and there was never another car. You have to really be messed up to whack into somebody when nobody, when you're the only one there. But I mean, still, it's not the right thing to do, obviously. You ever see a change in a place, Greg, from essentially a blue collar, you know, blue collar people from the South Side type of school to now, we're definitely in the one percenters, aren't we? Here's how.
Oh,
here's how bad it is, Greg. It used to be every year you stayed in the dorm, and when you got to a certain point, when you were old enough, they would give you the Morris Inn, which is this, you know, which was the hotel on campus. Well, now the Morris Inn has been remodeled into this incredibly nice place, to where it's too good for us. They made us stay across the street, like the Embassy Suites or someplace. So it was like,
but it gets the job done.
That's fine. But yeah, but the thing is,
it's all based on football, right?
People coming in for football.
It's not graduation.
Well, no, it's a reunion. They do every 5 years. You get to do, and they have out of we had 422 people, and a lot of people brought it was 600 people at the dinner Saturday night. That's unbelievable when you think about it. How many people graduated, John, and how many people croaked? We what was it, like 1,200 graduated and 250 are dead or something.
So that's very good, you know, representation.
But when we talked last week about these other sports, and when what this and this all it's all ties in. All you need to do when you hear us talking about this stuff, it may sound like a bunch of guys just chattering, but the economics of it are amazing. When you now, granted, people donate this money. I don't know if they do it to a lot of the other schools, but they surely do there. And they donate for these athletic facilities. But if you walk down the street, what they did, Greg, there used to be a road to the north of campus, south of campus. Somehow they contracted with the city to move the road like three blocks. And in that three-block area, you now have the new hockey arena, the new lacrosse arena, the girls' softball place. Somebody else is there too, Janet. Well, the baseball was always there, right? That was the last one. That was the furthest part you could go. Well, now there's like three stadiums past that. And then there's places that have. Well, now there's a training facility for this place and that place. But what I'm saying is, if we go down this road that it looks like we're going, when I say we, college sports, I don't know that there's going to be scholarships for the lacrosse team or the girls' softball team. Why would there be, John? If we're going to full economic, that means somebody who's worth something to you, like in football, is going to get paid when they never were, well, weren't paid as much before. But it also means, why the hell would I want to give the girls' softball team a scholarship or the men's lacrosse team? Well, what's the point? They don't make any dough. Right?
There's been a kind of confusion. I think the variety of sports teams and the members, I think, have been seen as a recruiting tool, not just for the players, but just as a way of you know, getting interest, exposure, press, notoriety for a sport or a player or whatever. And, you know, every college banks on this to some extent, where they've got, you know, star players for a while, and everybody in the country's talking about them or that person, and that's good for business. But there's, I think, a diminishing returns point where there's not enough interest in some of the sports that they're really, you know, making major outlets to try to, you know, develop programs, pay coaches, recruit players, get scholarship money and everything else. And at some point, I don't know if they have much to show for it. And I'm sure this has been studied to the nth degree, but I don't know if it's been studied enough for its long-range implications. And when I was looking at the amount of real estate now that's devoted to this on campus, you know, much greater, and the buildings and everything else, it becomes something that, you know, takes a lot of money to sustain. And some of this, I think, is transitory. It's not something you can't count on. And given what's going on in the college sports world generally, it may have peaked, I think. And so I'm just kind of wondering what this will mean for the long haul. I don't know if Notre Dame needs sports the way it used to, and you've said this on the program too, that they've got enough cachet now and enough, you know, appeal to a wide range of students and donors, where I don't think sports is. I don't mean to diminish it or ridicule it at all, but I don't think it has the same kind of importance that it once did.
Well, it depends, like anything else, on where you want to look. If you're a sports junkie, which a lot of people are, and by the way, we probably are too. If you're a sports junkie, you probably can look at the bulge. I'm going to say there probably is a bulge in some of the contributions the year your team wins the national championship or something. I mean, right. there's a bulge in ticket sales the next year. There's probably a bulge in people's ability to, you know, to give a contribution if they're going to get tickets or something along those lines. Matter of fact, one thing I noticed, Greg, talk about being out of tune. When they expanded the Notre Dame Stadium, I don't think they didn't want to be the first. I think they would have been the first college. This has been, 20 years since they expanded the stadium. They didn't want to be the first place to have skyboxes in a college setting. But then as soon as they were done, somebody else did. And once they weren't first, of course, they're all over it, right, John? And yep. they put up this huge thing where we had our dinner on Saturday night. And the idea was that this is really for students, too, which is such a load of crap. Not that there isn't some student stuff there, but basically all the money is in the rewarding the high-end donors for the skyboxes and the big party rooms and the bars and all that stuff upstairs. Yeah, there's stuff downstairs for students to hack around if they want to, but it's not. What do you figure it is? 10% of the cost, John? Maybe. Well, now, I didn't even realize that across the stadium, there's now a similar thing to the other side, with a bunch of skyboxes and seats that are, you know, they're heated and all that stuff. Well, so it's a way of rewarding big donors as well, correct? And if you give $50 million to Ohio State, you're going to get a skybox. You know, and that's just part of the deal. So, there's some of that. But then, if you look the other way and you say, okay, what's the budget of Ohio State or what's the budget of UCLA or something like that, and you go, well, I don't know what Ohio State's is. I could probably look it up. But, matter of fact, Greg, if you got a second, why don't you do that? UCLA's is $11.5 billion. I mean, really? They're dependent on the football team? Give me a break. We're talking about a massive organization with money coming in from government, from every place. You've got hospitals. You got this stuff. They don't care if there's a football game. So should they be... For $10 million more in a TV contract, should they be sending people to Rutgers, New Jersey to play volleyball or something? I don't know how well thought out that is. But we're not, you need, if you're ever out and about at one of these universities, and if you ever find yourself lost in South Bend, God help you, we're not talking about a lacrosse field or a women's softball field. We're talking about full bricks and mortar, full visitors and stuff, locker room, meeting rooms. It's a pretty big bricks and mortar structure that just happens to have a field attached to it, right, John? We're not talking about a field out there where it looks like a diamond that says girls softball on the cyclone fence. We're not talking about that at all, are we?
No. Well, you think of the importance of football just in the case of Notre Dame. I mean, pre 1890 or so, 1900. You can see in the advertising for the institution, there's no mention of sports, particularly. The Tribune used, I found this in doing research in old newspaper databases, and the Tribune on Sundays would advertise educational institutions in the area, and Notre Dame was always in there, and they were plugging themselves as a reputable academic, the classics program with strong religious presence by the Holy Cross Fathers, beautiful campus, blah blah blah. No mention of sports, and they didn't need that for the kind of recruiting that they were doing in those days. And it wasn't about expansion; it was really about survival. All these schools had various times when they had fires in their campuses, as Notre Dame did, or bad economic times, and their enrollment declined, or wars when
they almost went under World War II. The Navy saved them.
Right. And sports became it was a wonderful thing for Notre Dame to have a winning football team and a series of winning coaches and charismatic figures too, from Rockney to Leahy, all these people that were great marketing tools for the university, whether you had any interest in ever playing a sport or were any good at it, but to go there and to have everybody in the country talking about the place you went to was a real shot in the arm for recruiting. I just don't see that kind of appeal being as essential anymore, given that the way the budget has exploded and the tuition has exploded, and it's almost like sports are a luxury item. It isn't even that important again that you have a national championship, let alone a string of national championships. To justify all these expenditures, the institution keeps chugging along, and they have a wide range of sports attractions, but I don't see it as important in the college's mission as it was, say, when we went there. So I kind of think that's the case at other places, too.
Well, John, you know, there's a huge similarity, and people are going to say, that's it, this chief guy is really nuts. There's a huge similarity between the breakdown in the old hospital payment method before Obamacare, and which was falling apart anyway, and what's happening now in sports. And when I say this, they're going to say, oh, where the hell is he coming with this one? Back in those days, you know, roll back to 1994 or something. If you went to a hospital, there were all these levels of payment. There were people who had what they call now Cadillac policies, the full policy. You go in and have a baby, you got the full number, they sent you out the door, and the wife's got, well, the wife, the both of them have 30 diapers at, you know, $5 a diaper or something, you know, whatever it was, and you got the aspirin and they charge you $20 for the app. There was that level on the top, then there was another level under that paid a little bit more. You paid way more than they were spending on you. Then you went down the line and there were the Medicare people, which maybe they broke even on, and there were the Medicaid people who they certainly didn't break even on, and there were people that they couldn't turn away that they got nothing for. So essentially some people in there insured the rest of the people in the hospital. Now you look at that economically, I would anyway, and say, this is not sustainable. Somewhere along right. the line, the people at the top are going to say, what the bleep over? Why am I paying for all these rest of these people? I mean, just because I'm in the hospital, I shouldn't have to subsidize people that can't pay. Maybe that's everybody's job. We should spread this around to the rest of society. So if we're going to, I'm just saying, economically, the point being, you know, whether right or wrong on that, you know, turn me off for that, but economically, it's wait a minute. If Joe comes to the door with a broken leg and we can't turn Joe away or Jane, and we have to fix the broken leg and it costs us $2,000, who pays the $2,000? Well, in those days, it was simple. It was the people upstairs or on the same floor paying, right? Okay, so now the same model has dropped down to this college sports. We have some schools have this incredibly successful football team, okay, even though their expenses seem to rise up to meet the team. But that's another story. We have that, and then we have. So now, what are we going to do? We like these other sports, but we're going to play this game where the football and basketball, we're not going to pay the participants, even though the quarterback, and we know the quarterback at a big school, he's a big star, is worth something. I'm not saying how much or whatever. Maybe that guy should be getting paid since the coaches and everybody else are getting paid. But we're going to do it another way. We're going to say those guys are going to subsidize all the other sports. And then even if the government's stepping in and saying, okay, the guy's football team has to subsidize the women's rowing team for whatever God knows reason. Okay, so you know, in their mind, they're doing things right. Title IX, if you're giving a guy a scholarship, yeah, except for this guy's making you money and that girl's not. Or it could be a school that has a great women's basketball team. She's making you money and the guy and the men's soccer team, You can't charge anybody a buck to watch the game. So there's this spreading of costs. And now we're saying, oh, no, you can't do that to the football player or someplace. All of a sudden now, he needs to be paid what he's market worth. Okay, but now if you take that story, then you say, okay, well, you know, why am I paying this other person when they're not worth anything? I'm not talking about anything. It's, you know, what are we doing here? So, you know, where are we with this? And now we're finding out now what? We're not anywhere, right, John?
Right, but from an accounting standpoint, none of this makes sense. You know, that's like a lot of stuff with not just Title IX, but, you know, real estate taxation and, you know, immigrant policy and everything else. It's not sustainable. It's a source of irritation to people who are footing the bill. And maybe, you know, it improves your image or your self-image, but it's not, you know, wise or good for the long-term financial health of the place.
Well, I mean, it's the same with, you know, before you came on, what Greg and I were talking about. Is the current setup of the stock market and the futures market to a smaller extent, not smaller, it's a very important market, but less people trade it, is it set up in a way that maximizes the, quote, trading, I mean, are we talking about time and place? Or are we talking about place where people can go and get the best liquid and deep markets they can find? And the answer is absolutely no. It's designed now to splinter apart for some people to take advantage. And the guise is you're not paying any commission, you're paying cheap commission, and people think it's worth it. Now, is it really? Or not? You know, why do we want people trading at 3 in the morning when one-tenth of the participants, and that's a big number, probably more like one-hundredth of the participants are around? Do you really want that? Well, why should somebody not have a right to trade in the middle of the night? I'm not saying you shouldn't have a right. I'm saying, what are we trying to accomplish? How have we harmed somebody to have to wait till 8:30 to trade GameStop when he can't run it up $20 when nobody's around?
I found the positions, by the way. He's got $65.7 million in GME calls.
Right, now, but how... Well, what's the penalty for him if he's wrong? None.
Well, he loses money.
No. I mean, if that number is not legit, you're not getting a statement from his clearing firm.
No, but I don't think he's advertising it that way, is he?
Well, I mean, he looked like he was showing his position.
Yeah.
One thing. Well,
yeah,
okay.
They do that all the time on Reddit and what's it called?
Well, what if I say I'm long 120,000 calls and I'm actually long 12?
Well, I think the government would say that's shouldn't believe everything on the internet.
Well, yeah. Well, that's
he
my
isn't
point.
Licensed or anything, though, so that could be.
Yeah, he's not licensed.
If he's saying his big thing was I like the stock, and that's not really, you know, advice, but he shows kind of what's going on, and there's no penalty for.
Well, he's not a dealer. I mean, he's not somebody who has registration. So the advantage you give to people that aren't registered, or the disadvantage you give to people registered, meaning like me, is astronomical. It's crazy. So whatever, in one man's opinion, but these are all sort of the same subjects, right, John? I mean, what are we doing here? We have people paying an exorbitant amount of money to go to college, okay, which is a problem, okay? What, I mean, right, to be perfectly blunt, none of the people that we hung with in college, I won't say none, a couple guys might have got rides because they were smart enough. I mean, I'm going to say maybe Frank, whose dad was a orthopedic surgeon, he's the only one that could afford it today, right? No, yep. None of the rest of us would have gone there. I mean,
And academically, Tom, I wouldn't be going to Notre Dame if I were, you know, of age today, given my SAT scores, GPA, and everything were the same as they were 50 plus years ago. I'd be going someplace else, like a community college. And I wouldn't be ashamed.
Moraine Valley University.
Hey, you know, and I'd, especially at the tuition rates. I mean, I'd be honored if I could go. And Notre Dame's counselors used to tell me this at my college's college fair, where they would, you know, the transfer people would come every year and set up their booths in the atrium of my college and try to get people to, you know, come up and ask for literature and get on a mailing list and consider applying there. And the Notre Dame counselors were always there, and I'd go down and talk to them and ask them what their experience was with community college transfers. And they said, we'd love to have more of them. They've turned out to be some of our best, you know, bets as far as people who have already mastered the hard part of being a college student. A lot of these people have had jobs and taken classes at the same time and trying to piece everything together. So they've figured out how to be successful at it. So there's no shame in being a community college transfer into Notre Dame. And that's the route I would be going today if I were lucky enough even to pass the portal of the academic rigor. The financial part would be, you know, in some ways just as big of a deterrent. So it's a whole different ballgame now. And in all of this, sports, you know, doesn't have the same attractive power it once did. I don't want to diminish its importance or anything like that again, but it doesn't seem to be a big consideration when there's so many other hurdles to overcome.
Well, I'll tell you what, in terms of the lower end, the idea that colleges are so expensive, if you talk to, you talk to a lot of people, you talk to anybody who has kids, everybody's got their girls playing lacrosse or soccer or something or fencing with the idea that if somebody's good enough to come up with a $250,000, you know, whatever bonanza by getting one of these scholarships, I mean, the parents are very aware of that, very aware. That if you have a kid with any kind of talent, it could be worth, you know, $300,000 to you in terms of not having to pay.
Right.
That's why everybody who has thinks their kid is decent at baseball or soccer. You don't just play the kids in the neighborhood. You come home from work and call up your buddies and go out and play. You're on a transfer team or a travel team at age 9, for God's sake, which to me is so insane. I can't go there.
Rules.
I mean, but so everybody's convinced that the kid is now the ticket to college on their own. I mean, so it's made a huge difference. I mean, I was never that good at anything, but my parents never said, gee, let's make the kid practice 12 hours a day to save on our $3,000 tuition 15 years from now. I mean, that didn't happen. But now it's $70,000 or $85,000 or whatever the hell it is. It's a thought, isn't it? SP Futures up 12, Nasdaq Futures up 797. John, when you come back, let's talk a little bit more about who exactly is behind all these mortgage foreclosures and stuff, and are these places a good buy here? I mean, it's a good question. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Well, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Greg Pappas here doing some research for us, and we have who do we got over? What's your name again? You weren't here the last two Mondays.
Oh, that's me. Yes, how's it going?
It's been a while, but you're a bad dude. The Mondays are all the holidays, and you're a Monday guy, and we like you.
Yeah, well, it's good to be back, honestly.
And you stick us with Andrew, you know, on Wednesday. Have you seen the new Andrew?
I've not seen the new Andrew. Would he grow a mustache or something?
No, Andrew's a great kid. He was a guy that didn't want to do any sports, didn't do anything like that, and he didn't really have much of a job. Well, he came here, he loves it here, and he got a job at this kind of a chicken place. Now he's a manager. He's going to open up a store for him.
Oh, wow, yes. I've heard a little bit about this.
And here's a guy that kicked off his high school bowling team as a sophomore. But now he decides he likes his middle-aged sword fighting.
I've heard about
this. He's down
this
like
as well,
25,
yeah.
30 pounds. He looks spectacular.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, you look at him and go, wait a minute. Plus, he's on time every week.
Oh, wow. He's got me beat. Yeah.
I go, there's something wrong with the force. The force is shaking. But no, he's doing He's on. By the way, Jan, it's Greg amazing. Just did some research for us. University of Illinois, Division of Intercollegiate Athletics, spent $152.8 million last year. They had $148.3 million in revenue. So that seems to me they're down five, right? Wisconsin, on the other hand, has $144 billion in revenue and shelling out $132 in expenses. So they made $12 million. What do you suppose? They're almost exactly equal. What do you suppose the total operating budgets are of Illinois and Wisconsin? This includes hospitals and all the other stuff. Take a guess, John.
Oh, I wouldn't even billions, but
$7.5 billion. So we're talking about what percentage here? 1%?
Yep.
Really? That people only give money to Illinois because of the football team? I mean, I love sports. Everybody knows that. And I'm always going to shade things in the direction of that way. But now they're all being looked. We're asked to look at this totally as a business. All I'm saying, Jan, is I'm going through the numbers. Be careful. Be careful when you do that. Just saying.
Well, I noticed, you know, I took a spin, you know, before I got to Notre Dame. I drove through Notre Dame, through St. Mary's campus, you know, the women's college directly west of campus. And I noticed the whole expansion there of sports facilities, you know, gym, training centers, you know, open fields with stands in them, and, you know, pretty elaborate physical plants, given that, you know, how little of that there was at St. Mary's when we were students.
Little, there was none.
Yeah.
Did they even have a team of
now,
anything?
Now if it's not a recruiting tool, at least it's something that I think these institutions feel they have to have in order to either improve their chances for, you know, grant money or accreditation, you know, but whatever they, you know, feel is the need for it. But it clearly has resulted in a transformation of their physical plant in a good way. It's very professionally done. It's, you know, it's smaller than the University of Notre Dame's facilities, but it's still, you know, by their standards, I think, quite impressive. So there is some attraction factor, but like you say, when you reduce it to numbers, I got to believe that it's overplayed and overstated in the long run. It doesn't mean that much to most of the people who are going there or the people who are donating money.
Well, I think that, you know, if St. Mary's wants to have a lacrosse team, maybe it's a club team or something, why shouldn't they? I mean, there ought to be some facilities where somebody can go out and do something. You can't just sit in your room and study all day.
No, and I was impressed, you know, the number of students out doing stuff, women doing stuff, jogging in groups, or just, you know, whatever, playing sports, soccer and stuff. This is a part of the healthy, you know, the time of youth when you get a chance to indulge things that don't just involve sitting around in libraries and, you know, being a studious person. This is all good for the final product too. So I don't know.
Well, Jan, the whole decades we spent with no women's sports, I never understood that at all. My mother, I don't think, was much of an athlete, but she goes, I don't see why women don't get the same chance to play. We like to play too, compete, something to do, go out and take out your frustrations. That's why people play sports. She goes, why did people decide that women didn't want to do any of that? She goes, I would have loved to have played. She goes, I wouldn't have been a star, but I'd have been out there. You know? Whoever even thought that up, I can't imagine that. I mean, why, you know, that women weren't able to. I mean, you play sports not to be a star. You play sports because you love to do it, and it takes out frustrations. It's competitive. It's great for your. It gets rid of the adrenaline. I mean, it's a rush. The organization, all this stuff. It should be part of everybody's life, whatever it is. I mean, look how much fun Andrew's having, whacking around with a middle-aged sword, for God's sake. I mean, no matter what it is.
Well, you know, it changed as the drift towards co-education became the norm. But in, you know, other times, the Catholic girls' high schools in big cities, the Catholic women's colleges, and there were private, you know, non-religious places as well, where women's sports were there for the women students. When coeducation, you know, became the wave of the future, And Notre Dame got on that bandwagon too. This really changed, and the economics of it have only now started, I think, to show people exactly what this means. If you have, you know, equal opportunities for sports recruiting and sustaining programs for both genders, and you're going to, you know, financially have to make some adjustments elsewhere if you really want to be serious about this stuff, because the women's sports don't pay the universities in the way that the men's students.
But that shouldn't mean that people shouldn't get a chance to participate, be it inner hall, be it intramurals, whatever it is. I mean, there should be stuff to do for people.
Right. It doesn't have to be big bucks stuff.
Right.
You know, it could be, you know, the parking lot, the basketball, you know, tournament, which is totally non-varsity at Notre Dame, but books or basketball and things like that, which, you know, that was a very good thing. There should be opportunities for all students to do those kinds of things too.
Well, the interesting part, Jan, is that last time I checked, most schools teach economics, right? Matter of fact, that's where I learned mine. And I don't see how anybody would ever have thought that when you went from the Newt Rockne, Frank Leahy days, when it was a big thing for the school to go play Army or Southern Cal, but by the way, the school couldn't afford food along the way, so they packed a bazillion sandwiches up in the dining hall and stuck these kids on the train, which was, you know, overnight or more than that, 2 nights to go to Southern Cal. That you did this to make yourself a countrywide name as a university, and Notre Dame did that through the football program, and like you say, through guys like Rockne, like guys like Frank Leahy, that were larger than life, the coaches. I mean, Alabama did that with Bear Bryant. I mean, people did that stuff. I mean, hell, Pop Warner was with the Carlisle Indians, for God's sake, right? And he made those people a national name. So the whole point of this is that, yes, there's nothing wrong, but anybody who knows anything about economics, you can't sit there and go, okay, wait a minute, look at this stadium, look at these skyboxes, look at the money, look at the amount of tickets, how much money per ticket. By the way, parking pass is $150, for God's sake. And all of a sudden, coaches are making millions a year. Assistant coaches that used to be... Eric Parsegian made $20,000 a year from Notre Dame. And that was not that long ago. I mean, it was a while ago, but not... And now these guys, if they're not making $5 million with a 20 or a 10-year program, there's something wrong here. So as this whole thing moves onward, you could get some kid, if you taught him economics for a week, first thing he'd say is, what about the players? I mean, duh. I mean, how come they're left behind? They're making $70,000, which isn't even 70 if you look at the what it actually costs the university. Now, granted, some guys are getting a little something here and blah, 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 but, I mean, all of a sudden you sit there and go, this dog doesn't run too much further, does it?
This is what's going to, I think, bite a lot of these institutions, because it's pretty hard to show the return on expenditures when they become so large, and, you know, where the inequities are so apparent too, in who's really making the money here and who's getting compensated for it. This is going to be, and it already is, a very troubling process.
Well, if the Illinois or Wisconsin numbers that I gave you, and Kevin said, a lot of times the revenue side is just a plug for the other side, which is probably true, but still, if it were to cover all the other costs, you know, women's soccer. Well, actually, Illinois didn't even have a men's soccer team. But it covers women's soccer. It covers men's, you know, God knows what. They don't have a hockey team either. But if it covers all those other sports and it, quote, covers intramurals for all the rest of the people, if it does all that, it is. I'll say, Jen, it's a formula. Now, whether it's the right formula or not, but it at least is a formula where you could say, well, okay, the football team covers all the rest of these guys. But at some place along the line, and I say this because Jen and I were sitting at a table Saturday night, and across the way from us, still looking pretty good, by the way, was Dave Casper. Graduated with us, and he's an all-pro, was a huge star at Notre Dame and at the Oakland Raiders, and is now and has been for a while in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, deservedly so. Well, the dude can barely walk, and he's got at least one, probably two hips. I don't know about the knees, but there's some artificial Dave in there, and he can barely walk. He's still a huge man. Now, look at the price that guy paid. Now, I mean, I'm sure he did pretty good at Oakland, and if he invested okay, he's probably fine. I think Pro Football Now has a I mean, even when he played, I bet he gets a pretty decent pension, Jan, although I don't bet it's not astronomical either. But I mean, you know, he paid the price for our entertainment, right? Without question. I mean, you know, the tight end gets whacked every single play, right? How many times? So, I mean, it's not like these people aren't paying the price. So not only are they not getting paid, they got a miserable rest of their life, right? To a certain extent. Now, granted, you know, there's some notoriety that people love, and would they do it again? They'd probably say yes, but still, the economics of this. Well, John, let's shift gears to the economics of every week, and I think Nancy's on there. I'm not sure if it's her or Audrey, but somebody will be on later, and we'll talk about what is going on. A building with these numbers, people are winging numbers around. Of course, now the numbers now are so big that, you know, millions and trillions. What's a trillion? Well, a trillion's kind of a lot to you and me. And I think most of our listeners, we could all live on maybe a trillion, even split it up a little bit. But what happens when a building 10 years ago, all of a sudden it's sitting there and it's worth $200 million, and the people who bought the place put down $40 million, which means they borrowed $160 million, and now they go, screw this, there's nobody here, you can have my $40 million, I'm out of here. And now the other place, whoever they are, who's got the mortgage, could be a bank, could be somebody, now they say, well, we can't find anybody, we're going to put it up for auction, because now all of a sudden the taxes keep coming, and we're not so sure how quickly this county drops those taxes down, if at all. I mean, they have to at some point, if there's no revenue there. Because a lot of your house is based on what the property and the improvements, right? But your commercial property, most of it's based on revenue, right, John?
Cash flow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, our cash flow is down. But still, I'm going to say the drop in revenue or drop in taxes is going to be a lagging indicator for a building that just lost half their tenants, right? And the next year, they're going to get the same tax bill as the year before, and they're going to have to appeal it and all that kind of crap. So all of a sudden, this thing now is $160 on the mortgage, goes out for auction, and somebody buys it for, and these numbers are not crazy in Chicago, say $20 million. So now the guy, he has this building. He better have taken a look at it, because I guarantee you, or I reasonably guarantee you, that in the last few years, the maintenance has slacked some, right? So he's going to have to catch up on the maintenance. So it's not just this flaming deal somebody's getting. Might need now that the elevators where you're going to, you know, totally redo one per year, you know, are 5 years behind or something. So there's issues with these buildings that have been going downhill since COVID, right? I doubt if the, yep. So now this guy buys the thing for 20. So now somebody is eating another 140, right? When does that gurgle up? The first guy, I guess if he put up cash 10 years ago, you know, he not only didn't make any money on it, but he lost it. That's not so good. Now the bank is down, you know, 140. When does this percolate up, John, or does it? Or they made so much money somewhere else, they just eat it? Or what's the deal?
Well, what I think is happening is, you know, when these properties reach the auction block, that's the last straw. I mean, it's clear to the owners, and it may be the lender at that point, where the lender...
Well, the owner's already gone, right? He's already walked.
Yeah, the lender is... trying to unload this, because lenders don't make money managing properties they seize in foreclosure. They're already in the hole as soon as the first tax bill comes out that they're responsible for, that they have nothing to show for other than hanging on to the asset, which is rapidly diminishing in value by the day, practically. So that means that there's going to be a fire sale kind of approach to the pricing, and a very small group of buyers who are brave enough, or, you know, cavalier enough to sink money into something that already has ceased to operate the way it was intended. I noticed today there's a building on the market now at 105 West Madison Street at the corner of Clark that was converted and upgraded in 2016. I mean, it was always an office building, and now it's, you know, half residential, or a portion of it's residential, and the rest is office space. And it's going on the market, and you have to, you know, right in for the terms of the sale. It's not advertised, but the building is only 58% occupied, and that is both the residential and the commercial space. So this is the model, Tom, I think, that's now unfolding. And so many buildings, you know, downsize their office space when, you know, people stop working downtown in larger numbers, and so many older office buildings became completely residential, and pretty nice ones.
Well, now, when you say residential, what level of residence? I mean, there's no, the windows don't open. I mean, what are you getting? I mean, is this, we're not talking about...
But in the older buildings, I mean, there were new windows, and there's just double hung sash or Chicago style triple windows with a fixed sash and movable sashes on either side of it. They redid those. So the Fisher Building down on South Dearborn.
What level of residential are we talking about? Are we talking about a high end public housing somewhere in the middle?
Not public housing. I would say relatively high end, not big apartments. Primarily singles or retired people, rentals. Not condo buildings in most cases. But there was enough of a market for people who either had retired or retired at a young age or were still working downtown and wanted a nice place to live and not have to have a car or pay for parking or tolls or anything else. So this fueled an explosion in residential properties, and you began to see people walking their dogs in the evening rush hour downtown. You never saw that when I was working downtown.
No.
Nobody had dogs. Nobody lived downtown. Nobody wanted to live downtown. But now, that became a solution at a time when people's job, situations were altering and office space was being consolidated or moved out of the city. So that freed up space that had to be converted to something, and residential space became a going concern. And now you got residential interest failing as the city becomes less and less attractive, downtown as a place to live. And the business stuff continues to be in turmoil.
Well, Jenny, are you getting some people who say you move to, I actually know somebody did this, they moved to New Buffalo and they work from home, type of thing. Well, right. If all of a sudden you have to come to work 1 week a month, 2 weeks a month, or 3 days a week, obviously a place downtown here is probably pretty attractive.
Right, and I'm sure there's very good deals to get now because a lot of people, I think the bloom is off of living downtown, and they've decided this isn't the dream I hoped it would be, and they've gotten out of the picture completely. There will always be a need for people who need a short-term living space downtown, but I just, until the business part of it seems to reach bottom, and I don't think it's reached bottom yet, there isn't going to be enough interest in people living downtown, either to work downtown or just to live and do something else or collect your Social Security. It doesn't seem to be working on either end of this balance sheet, and where it ends up, it's only time will tell. I just don't think that there's so many buildings in this predicament now that you're going to see a wholesale collapse of property values, such that it's going to take, it'll take like the period from the 1930s to the 1950s for downtown to come back, and that's what happened in Chicago. There was no construction downtown from 1931 until 1955, new buildings of any kind.
But wasn't the Chicago titled in Trust Building, which actually is built on, talk about a piece of history, it's built on the site of the old Greyhound bus depot.
Yeah.
There wasn't another building downtown after that one for like a decade. Was that, what period of economic activity was horrible was that? When was that completed?
Well, that was mid 90s.
I was going to say 97 to 2007. By the way, the market, for those of you that absolutely can think the market goes up every day, and I've been doing this for a while, 97 to 2007, the market was unchanged. Even them mentioning it to people, they don't want to hear it. They put their hands over their ears. I mean, it's got to go up every day. I got to make 20% on my NVIDIA this week, type of thing. There's a lesson to be learned here someday. Hopefully I'm not around to see it, but this craziness that we don't have to work anymore, we just put our money in the market, that'll have a flip mirror someday. I mean, it always has, let's put it that way. I would be surprised if it never does again, when John and Pete, when they were doing all the stuff on CNBC, when John was flying out there pretty much every week, and so was Pete, it was, they got themselves an apartment, a one bedroom or something they shared out there for instead of a hotel room every night. But, in New York, a lot of that happens because you can buy an apartment right down the block from where you work. which Chicago wasn't really that model for a while, for a long time. It was a central business district, but that there you could always get something close to where you work. It might have been, you sit there and why am I paying this much for a studio? Because you're not paying it for a hotel, right? I mean,
right.
So it's a
after the Chicago Title building on Clark Street there. There was a big boom in luxury residential spaces. So the Millennium Tower on Wabash, overlooking Park, and other buildings in that same area and east of there, that were were spectacular apartments, condos, big price tags, and it takes a lot of money to sustain those. But there was no shortage of buyers for a while, and I think a lot of those buyers must be wondering, well, what's this going to be worth, in 6 months. 5 years, whatever.
Yeah.
Because downtown doesn't have the same appeal. There's only so many times you can go to the Art Institute every week, or see a movie or something. That doesn't justify spending that kind of money when you don't, where you're afraid to go out, inside the building at night.
Well, I mean, downtown, if you wanted to spend 2-3 hours, all you do is walk through Marshall Fields.
Right.
I mean, the people watching was second to none, right? And then, but by the way, everything in the world was right there. You check everything out and whatever you wanted to do. But yeah, we've lost sort of a lot of that. You've seen some of these old buildings. Audrey had a person who did something, bought a house from her somewhere at one point, and we got invited. Remember up at Outer Drive East?
Oh, on 400 East Randolph, yeah.
Which used to be to the lake side of the drive. Of course, now it's not. They had the big, do they still have the pool with the big glass dome over it? I don't know if they do or not, but... They had that. They were all small apartments, right? Well, this one person bought. Yeah, Jen, I don't know how many they bought. Probably bought like 7 or 8 of them. And this huge apartment, and they had, their apartment went all the way through the entire floor. If you opened up the windows on one side, you open up the windows on the other, you got the flow through air all the way through the whole hall.
Cross ventilation.
The whole hallway was gone and everything. They basically took like a half a floor when they were done. What a neat place. I mean, God, I don't know how much that cost them, but.
That was the big attraction, that was in the 60s when that opened. It was like, what the heck, an apartment building in Randolph?
Well, to let everybody know...
Café Latour, remember the fancy restaurant? It was the premier restaurant in Chicago at the time.
Yeah.
On the top floor.
Well, when I was still doing my consulting work at Pullman right before I went to the trading floor, so we're talking 1978, 79, these guys came in from Philadelphia, Day and Zimmerman. And because I worked for them on a delay and disruption claim, writing up, big pieces on different pieces of the railroad car that nobody would care to listen to. But I did one on the dining car, I did one on the air conditioning system, I mean, you name it. So these guys, they all matriculated over to Lake Point Tower. Because the wives and stuff, nobody wanted to be in downtown Chicago.
No.
I mean, there was no Navy Pier, there was no Millennium... I used to park downstairs for 12 cents. Navy Pier was dark. The only thing there was rats. And Lake Point Tower was where everybody wanted to be because you had this huge park that's part of the place. You had the food store there. You had doctor's offices there. And people came from out of town. They never left the place. It was their city. They never got out and walked toward the downtown. Maybe I wouldn't say never, but rarely. And the city was an armed camp. And now it's... I don't know if it's as bad as it is now, but it was... pretty close. Stake Street was a mall with nobody on it. It was awful. So, can we come back? We've done it before. I mean, we used to have movies about how bad New York was, right? My first time I went to Times Square, I went out for my first trip to New York Stock Exchange, and I stayed in Midtown and walked around. Times Square, it was nothing like today. It was one adult bookstore after another.
Peep shows,
and you name it. It was like
arcades,
a bunch of hookers all over the place. And everybody thought New York was dead, and then it came back.
Looked like a shabby Coney Island.
Yeah. What's the economic motivation for that happening again today? Is it going to be, if you're really concerned about infrastructure and concerned about people driving and all that kind of stuff, well, the cities have all that already, right? Train transportation, all that stuff. You can move 1 million people every day back and forth, and it's right here. Now, is that going to become a huge advantage again someday? Probably. The question is kind of when, Jen. And I don't know, but how does, we have an election coming up, how does all this tie together. I mean, we'll talk about this more with Nancy Rod, who's over on today.
I'm on.
Okay, so how does all, we're going to do a break here and give the, at some point. I mean, how does this all tie together with a new president, maybe the old president? Well, there's going to be a new president, whether it's the old one or the new one. We're going to have an old president no matter what, right? Someone's already been in there. So that, you know, are we talking about differences in tax policies? We're talking about, is anything going to help any of this stuff that's going bad, or is it just going to keep fueling asset prices to where a lot of people feel real rich and other people don't? Let's go to break and then we'll talk about this. S&P is up 11, NASDAQ is up 100, and NVIDIA is up $38 now. Yes, there can only be one stock and it'll be it. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Support the Stocks and Jocks team. Hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, and Chief's favorite, the Stocks and Jocks ladies thong, all available at our online store. Just go to stocksandjocks.com and click the link to order any amount of great Stocks and Jocks merchandise for yourself and any other Stocks and Jocks listener in your life. The prices are affordable and the selection is out of the park. The Stocks and Jocks online store at stocksandjocks.com.
Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 90. Big movers are NVIDIA up $37. I think their earnings are this week. I'll look for that. Actually, I read that, and I think they've already been out. I'll take a look. These things get kind of foggy. In the Dow, we've got McDonald's up $1.98. We've got Microsoft up $1.17. Honeywell up $2.31. So not a whole lot of movement there, but mostly to the upside. NetHealth's down $1.97, but they've been having some issues. But it's 0.4% on those guys. Over in Asia, we've got rallies. Nikkei up $4.35, 1.1%. India stocks, which we don't usually talk about, hit record highs. Hang Seng up 323, so they bounced back from their Friday fiasco. It's 1.8%, so they're back up to 18,403, where they were, I think, Thursday morning. Shanghai down 8.3%, 3,078, and they're just like lumbering along, not doing much there at all. We're in Europe, we have rallies. We have DAX up 142, that's 0.8%. FTSE up 18.2, they were up more earlier. CAC around up 34.3, so those two have come down a little bit, but the DAX, no. The bonds. A 10-year down 4 basis points, 4.47. The Bund down 3, 2.62. Japan down 1, 1.06. We've got oil. This is a few days after the OPEC Plus Russia, I think that means. Oil prices slipped despite OPEC Plus production cut extensions. Those guys have become a sort of a paper tiger, in my opinion. But oil's up a dime, 77.09. Brent up a dime, 81.21. Natural gas up 14 cents, 272. So it's a full dollar over its low of a few months ago. RBOB unchanged at 242. We've got gold up a little bit, up 480, 2350, kind of where it's been hanging around, this middle of 2300 range. Silver up 13 cents, 3057. Copper up 5 cents. First rally in copper in a while, 4.65. Foreign exchange, we're kind of stuck at 108.4 in the euro and 127.2 on the pound, so they haven't moved much. Crypto rallying here, was down last week. 1,700 up, 1,700, 69,356. That's almost a 2.5% move. Yeah, Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Sports, good news is Cubs are off today.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, it is June 3rd, currently 7:37 a.m. Before that, let's get to traffic. Road construction on 94. The roadway is reduced to one lane from 47th Street between Wells Street and LaSalle. That work will continue until late October. Expect delays up to 5 minutes. As far as weather in Chicago, 62 degrees this morning and a high of 81. Warmer today than yesterday with sunny skies, 11 degrees to be exact. Down in Phoenix, 77 degrees right now and a high of 102 degrees, if you can believe it. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs lost their home game against the Cincinnati Reds 5-2, and White Sox lost as well to the Milwaukee Brewers. Final score 6-3. And if I can check here real quick, I believe that the only the Cubs, neither Cubs or the White Sox are playing today, but we do have the Diamondbacks playing the Giants tonight at 8:40 p.m., so tune into that if you're interested.
So you got your tickets for the big White Sox-Cubs game tomorrow?
Tomorrow? No, I ain't got nothing.
There you go. I got nothing. Do you want them? No.
I think if someone's offering those on the street, I'd say it's a bad deal.
Yeah, no kidding. So, Nance, we were talking about you this weekend. Audrey and I went down to South Bend, and we were talking about you, saying a lot of good stuff about how you're always avoiding me. But other than that, you heard some of the conversation with John and I downtown. It was very big. I hope your ears were burning. A lot of the people were talking about real estate, and I said, just so happens, I have a couple of real estate experts on the show, and they're talking about these are the groups that are actually trading houses. It's a lot of cash buyers. A lot of people are trading that have a house, sell it for a price, and trade to another house. And there's not as much entry level buyers as maybe would be healthy. And there's not a lot of people who are selling a 3-bedroom house and buying the 4-bedroom house, because that's hard to do when you're changing mortgages at 3.5 to 7. And basically saying a lot of the stuff you say on the, is any of that looking like it's changing, or are we still in a rut here?
No, it's not changing. I talked with Audrey Friday, and she said there's less than 30 days worth of homes on the market. In other words, if you wanted to buy a house, if everyone that looking wanted to actually buy in 30 days, they would be filled, and there's nothing left. So there's just not enough homes on the market. And that goes back to the fact that 40% of the people own their home outright. So do they really want to move if they don't have to? Probably not. And then out of the next 60%, 40% have mortgages that are, 3% or under. So I just don't see where people are motivated to really move right now. I did talk to some people in the construction industry, and they said that they're very busy. People are really fixing up their homes, and they're just staying. They're not planning on moving anywhere. They just can't afford, with the inflation that's going on, they just can't afford to do anything other than to, if the window's broke, you get it fixed. If the hot water heater's broke, you get it fixed. I mean, that's it. So I don't really believe there's a whole lot of reason for people to want to move. I've also talked to people in the employment industry, and they're saying that more and more people are getting let go with the higher minimum wage, that the companies are just doing less. In fact, a couple people actually told me at their place, if someone leaves, they're not replaced unless they're hitting a certain profit margin. In other words, if they're not turning so much of a profit, they won't even replace that person at all. whether they, and they said they could be 3 to 4 weeks behind in delivery, and they still won't replace that person because they're not making any enough profit or any profit.
Well, yeah, it's a problem. So, if you don't have the money to pay somebody, it's hard to hire somebody.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I don't have any great news about the, you know, the economy. We've been here before. We'll get out of it, just like, you know, John was saying about downtown. It's just going to take some time. So, and will the president, well, you know, president change or president stay the same? Probably not much more is going to be different if you have a president change. I mean, who knows?
Well, yeah, some of the the numbers are kind of sort of the, John, what do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I, hi, Nancy.
Hi, John, how are you?
Good, you?
Good, good, good. We just won't let Tom talk anymore, so take it away.
That's all right, it's fine, that's fine.
I'm wondering what you make of this announcement by United Wholesale Mortgage of 0% financing for first-time buyers, or at least one first-time buyer, if there's a couple borrowers. And 80% of the, you know, median income for the area where the house is located. And they're also offering a second mortgage up to $15,000 for your down payment. And I don't remember anything like this since, you know, 2006, 2007. And I'm wondering what impact you think this has for attracting borrowers, especially when you got low inventory of houses to begin with. But does it mean that we're kind of approaching another 2006, 2007 crisis in the subprime loan, you know, scenario?
What was the part about 0%?
Yeah.
Can you repeat that part?
Yeah, it's zero. If for certain borrowers, 0% financing for your mortgage, and it entails also a second mortgage in which you borrow the down payment. I mean, this is the goofiest thing I've. I mean, it's 0% finance. I mean, forget the down payment. You don't have one.
But you don't have one. Okay, so what I believe what you're saying, 0%. So you're saying 0% down? That sounds like. So what they're saying is you
0% down. Yes, for you. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm not 0%.
Yeah. Okay. Because the Doritos just said that's. I've never heard of that. Everybody's going to be leaving their 2% to get that.
0% down. Yes.
Okay. So what it is? It's a combination thing. You get a first and you get a second.
Right.
So you get 100% financing supposedly on the first. And then the second would allow you to put down the down payment.
Right.
So if it's a $100,000 house, what they're saying is they would give you $80,000 on the first and 20% down on the second.
Right.
Okay. And that all that does is you avoid private mortgage insurance.
Right.
Okay. So that just starts to show you that we're going to go back to the subprime market that they abolished. And provoke interest. And we've already been down this road and then instituted a bunch of rules after 2007, 2008 that we all have to follow now. And they're just finding another way around it. But it doesn't mean it's going to have a positive result or a good result. And if there is absolutely no inventory out there, why are we doing anything like this at all? I mean, they allow you to do it with 3% down as it is. So, and even though you're avoiding private mortgage insurance by putting together this product, you're probably paying the same amount anyways, because your second loan of the 20% will have a much significantly higher interest rate than the first. And then if you, for some reason, let's just say you buy it, you get it, and it's $100,000, and for some reason, you know, you get on your feet and you're being transferred or whatever the situation is, if you go to sell it, this is how you're underwater. Could be underwater because you probably owe, if you borrowed $100,000 and it's at a higher interest rate, when you go to sell it, you're going to have to bring money to closing to get out of it.
Yeah.
So is it a good product? We've already experienced this. It has, everything is good until it's proven that it's bad, because people take advantage of the
well, timing is everything.
That's what they're going to get in.
Timing is everything. If you buy it and the price goes up, it's genius. If it goes down, it's not so good.
It's not so good, right? So we, you know, it's not a not a product that we haven't seen before, but it's they're offering first and seconds now. That's what they're doing. But who's taking the risk once again? When we had the product before, it was 80% Fannie or Freddie or VA or FHA, and then 20% on the bank that was the servicer. Okay, now this time I do believe Freddie is going to take the whole risk. Freddie Mac is going to take the whole risk, and that's a government agency. So I don't see that this is going to be a. It's a good thing if it works, and like Tom said, if it goes down, it's not such a good thing at all.
Well, why don't? I mean, it's we get this. It's almost like we hire people to be our people in the government, and they should at least be able to take a rudimentary fifth grade economics course. I mean, when you have something like what happened in 2008, when you had people that legitimately bought homes at 235, which was the median price, put down 50 grand of their entire life savings or what they're going to get their mind power or whatever it was, and all of a sudden the houses drop down to 150, and all these people can't they even though they're paying 6.5%, the mortgage rates go down. Well, now the house doesn't appraise out; they can't get out. That would be the time when something like this would be genius to keep those people in their homes that haven't missed a payment no matter what. You don't wait until the prices are at record high and then give people a way to get in with the least amount of down payment. It's exactly the opposite of what you should do. We shouldn't be making it easy for people to buy houses at all-time highs. We should be doing it when the prices are down so people don't have to get kicked out. And what do we... I mean, who's behind this? Who's behind this? Mickey DeMope? I mean, what are we doing?
It's just another way to package a solution to be misused, really, basically. Well, it's like you're saying, if it were a market that was really low, you would say, okay, this is great, right? Because the people are going to get in and stay. But that isn't what's really going to happen here. Like you're saying, the home prices are so high, it's kind of silly, isn't it?
Well, it's probably in 2008. I was on, I think I might have still been on the radio with John, but anyway, we ran, and I went through the thing about what percentage of the population can afford a median home. And the fact was, it was like 15%. I'm going to say that's down to 12 or 10 now. The numbers are. I'm not saying somebody shouldn't buy a home. I'm not saying that, Audrey won't get them the best price and you'll get them the best mortgage. I know that's going on, but the prices are obscene compared to what people can afford to pay. Now, granted, if they're trading from another house that's up that much, there's people that are winners and losers. When the two winners trade with each other, everything's fine. But have you noticed, if you're aware of any areas, now the thing that'll come tumbling down, if it does, and I hope it doesn't, will be a place like where, when Robin, when she first moved out to New Jersey, she lived in an area right where Lucent Technologies was. So when Lucent, for those that don't have a long memory, Lucent used to be Western Electric, right, Jen? And
yeah.
Then they became what, Ameritech or something or other, but they were essentially the construction arm of AT&T. They made all the phones, all the switches, all that stuff. So at one point they were the most widely held stock in the world. And now I'm going to say 40% of anybody who was in the stock market doesn't even remember the name, okay? But anyway, she moved in an area where Lucent's headquarters were. How they got out to New Jersey from here, I don't know, but they did. Something like 40% of the kids in the school were from parents who worked at Lucent. And, oh, by the way, 40% of the homes. So they laid everybody off. Somebody bought them from Europe and basically closed the place down. Well, Robin said Max was in class. He had 28 kids, and then when he came back in the fall, there were 14. And she said there were 5 for sale signs up on her block. I mean, so all of a sudden the place... Well, that's sort of happening in Florida right now, Nance, when Dan tells us every Thursday that because of the insurance rates, a lot of people are just... They can't wait to get out of there. They can't afford it. Now, do you know of any places here? Fortunately, Chicago and the Southwest Side, for sure, where you and Otter are queens... I don't know that everybody has the same employer. I'm going to say they don't. Chicago is a pretty varied type of thing, so I don't know that happens here. But are you aware of any other place where all of a sudden there's a employment shift where 10% of the people. What's happening to those home prices? They got to be going down pretty fast because where are the buyers? All, I mean, right now you're saying there's no. I mean, I'd say there's nothing but buyers and there's no houses available. But all it would take is 200 houses to hit the market, and that changes, I think.
Well, it does. What you're saying is correct, but the south side, the only place I see a concentrated amount of people is in Mount Greenwood and Beverly, because the city workers have to live in the city.
Right.
And I can't see how the city's going to let their own workers go.
No, I hope not.
No. So that's not going to be happening. 10 or 15 years ago, Panduit out here had layoffs in, but it was never to the concentration we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, never. Chicago was a diverse place.
Yeah, no one really works at the same place that I have. I don't even think I financed two or three people at this, even in the days when you were, financing like crazy, refinancing, I don't think I ever had anybody who worked at the same place at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very strong thing. I mean, it's terrific when that happens. God help you, you're living in Janesville and they pull the Chevy plant or the Oldsmobile plant, Jen? Then what do you do? Well, we just came from Jen and I just came from a city. Audrey said to me on the way down there, she goes, why is South Bend, well, they're starting to come back with a lot of fiber optics and a lot of stuff that the last two mayors have done a nice job of having some research and a lot of high-tech stuff in the downtown area is growing. But she said, how come South Bend is, basically a bleep hole, and Granger and those places, Elkhart? I said, well, Studebaker was in South Bend, and so was Bendix. They were the massive employers. Studebaker was gone before we got there. Then Bendix, what happened to those guys, John? They had a massive plant, but they're not there anymore. Where Elkhart was the RV industry, which is still doing pretty good, and Granger became something else, and then they became a lot of warehousing and all kinds of stuff, and they just grew like a weed. Where South Bend went the other way. Their big employers went down. I mean, you couldn't give a house away in South Bend when Jen and I first went to school, because everybody couldn't wait to get out of there, right, Jen?
Yeah.
But fortunately, Chicago's never really had anything really kind of like that. Nancy, even when Western Electric left or Electromotive, the downtown area kind of picked up the slack, right? I mean, the south side looks terrible because that's where a lot of places were that were blue collar. I mean, you had Southworks and those kinds of places. We're talking about places that had, how many people work for Western Electric, Jen? 35,000 or 30,000 or some number? Was it 24/7 or 24/6? It was 24/6, right?
Yeah.
Three shifts. I mean, you don't have any of that. But there's nothing like that. But even in those areas, Nance, when those places went down, other places picked up the slack to a certain extent. I mean, that's the beauty of having a city. New York used to have those problems when the years when all of a sudden every firm laid people off. There was a lousy year. All of a sudden, New York real estate values would go down, and they'd come right back up a couple of years. But is there a catalyst? Nance, if we think a lot of this stuff is unaffordable, hopefully the catalyst is people start making more, right?
I had heard that China, or what they're hoping is that because the relations with U.S. and China is going to, is strained or could become more strained, that we will start bringing the manufacturing back. Like I heard Apple's moving out, they're moving to India.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't Apple. Someone's moving out, moving to India.
Well, a lot of them moved to Vietnam or India, yeah.
Yeah, they're starting to, move it out of China, and the hope is that they'll bring it back to the U.S.
Well, but how much is that costing us? Look at how much we're paying. How many billion dollars are we giving to the semiconductor industry to move back here or to open up plants here? I mean, it's a full government giveaway, right, Jen?
Yeah.
I mean, it's how much.
I wonder what you think about, this in the range of properties available to people. What's going on with houses that are not spectacular or not special at all, say, $150,000 or below, starter homes for people who are not yet in the real estate market? And I could see where 0% down might be a way of bringing those people on board and giving them a shot at owning a house, even on somewhat precarious terms. But do you see that the market, for houses in that price range is dead? Is it breathing? Are there any houses for 150,000 or below that people?
The only thing I've seen in that kind of a price range have been condominiums, and there's really strict rules around condominiums right now, meaning that you can't have rentals.
Age restrictions or whatever you mean to
say. Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, you can't have pets, this, that, the next thing. I mean, they're really hunkered down on, so that you just don't, you know, become a renter and not keep the property up, because mm-hmm. that in itself poses another problem. So it's been, I don't see any single family homes for in those prices. And I will say, in the areas where it's very, very, you know, lower income, I've seen the property taxes kill the deals. Property taxes are off the wall. They need to be reassessed and put them back down.
I was going to say, it's for 150 grand. I mean, you know, I obviously are on this more than me, but a couple times she was going to places where I said, you're not going, I'm driving you. We went to like Chicago Heights or somewhere, and the houses were under 150. I think they came with plumbing, but I'm not sure. And I'm going to say the taxes
it's not
were,
that bad.
But I'm saying the taxes were a grand a month. Because they lost what
the taxes are, like in Country Club Hills, the taxes are, you know, $5,000 to $7,000. It's just.
Well, the places crazy. We were. There were a couple houses that were under 150, or like 120, and the taxes were going to be way more than the mortgage.
Yeah, the taxes are. That's the part that's the you know, even with 0% down, it's the taxes that are killing these deals. That is what I have seen.
Well, these are places where the malls closed, John, like the Lincoln Mall and stuff, and they just dumped the taxes on. What was it? That three flat that the guy, one of Audrey's very industrious guy. Black dude buys this place in, you know, in this depressed area. It's a three flat. What did he pay? He had something like 90 for a three flat, and he put a whole bunch of dough into it to where the apartments are beautiful. What was his taxes? 15 grand a year, 18 or something?
Yeah, I think it was. It's just, this is what I'm saying. It's just, you know, sometimes you just got to be so careful because of what you're saying. I mean, it wasn't in the payment, it was in the taxes that people just couldn't keep up. So, John, it's just a situation you wouldn't even think of, would you?
No. I mean, if you're not in the market, I can't see any way you're getting into it at the price level that you could afford. And even with, you know, 0% down, it just doesn't really matter. You still can't afford the house because of
the taxes. The taxes were crazy.
Well, so, if you get this is more than anybody needs to know, but I was doing some expert witness testimony for something and something. And one of the ladies involved was a lady that lived in somewhat rural Mississippi, right? And you know, it was in a small town. It wasn't rural. But anyway, I ended up with all her, because she was part of the case. I ended up with all her financial records. I think she was making. I think her Social Security check was like $1,500 or something, and she was able to make do on that down there. I mean, her mortgage or whatever she was paying was like a couple hundred a month. Her water bill was like 10. Taxes were maybe 20 bucks, I mean, a month. It was like 250 bucks a year or something. And she'd go down there, there'd be the thing every month, every week was $25 to the Piggly Wiggly or something. I mean, she was able to exist. You can't do that here. I mean, what would they, your taxes and your water bill and all of your insurance, for God's sake, you can't come close to that here, can you?
No. The average all-in is probably at least a minimum of, well, taxes alone, if you just took the taxes, you'd be at like, you know, 400 to 500 a month. So you're talking lots of problems for people. That's a whole nother subject. What do you do that the Social Security is so low?
Well, is the insurance ballooned here yet? Not like in Florida, is it starting to balloon here?
It's predicted it's going to happen. I mean, it'll be in our continuing education this year that you know, you're going to have to figure that the insurance prices are really, really, really going to go up to absorb the losses that they've had. And, you know, how do you account for that when you're, all I can do is tell people this is what's predicted, but I can't use it in my reasoning to approve or deny a loan.
Nancy, in your formula, I promise last question because we're a little over. In your formula, with the if somebody has, once you get over 10 grand now, you can't deduct it, right, in your taxes? Does your formula,
that's true, isn't it, John?
I think so, yeah.
Does your formula, when you figure out if somebody can afford a place, and say the guy buys a, you know, $1 million house and the taxes are 25 or 30, does your formula take account for the fact that the next 20 is not tax deductible, that the income better go up?
No. We never, that's not in our formulas at all. We're not allowed to go near that.
Okay.
All you can do is have conversations with people about, you know, I usually ask people, what are you spending? What do you spend now? How much extra do you have at the end of the month? So if the answer is zero and they're increasing their, you know, monthly outtake by $1,000 by doing the transaction, I always say, well, okay, how are you planning on making up the difference?
What if the guy says, if I have 25 bucks less, I can get 5 beers for 25 bucks at the local tap, I can run right up there?
Well, see, that doesn't matter. I mean, all I can do is suggest, if his numbers hit the, because of discrimination laws, if his numbers hit and he gets an approval, there's nothing I can really do about it.
Well, that's a good thing, if he gets an approval, yeah, right? Anyway, Nance, thank you. Maybe I'll see you one of these days. Saw John this weekend. Imagine that, he was out.
No, see, I haven't seen John yet. I'm waiting.
Well, the thought of the two of you ever, on the one day a year you're available being the same day, that would be the randomness of that would be huge.
It will happen.
Yes. Are we gonna let him get away with it, John? There's the flag on the floor now.
John actually
penalty was, flags on the floor.
John was yanked away by his people to go take pictures. When was that for the newspaper, Jen?
No, those were the four people from my high school, Mount Carmel, who graduated Mount Carmel and Notre Dame. So
was John used to work for the newspaper. I thought you got whisked away for a picture of those guys.
No, I tried to get a hold of the person who, you know, ran the office there, and he was always occupied with other people, but I wanted to talk to him. But yeah, there weren't that many of us there from what I could see. So
anyway, good time was had by all. Nance, I just wish people wouldn't talk as much when they at the big dinner. Everybody's sitting there yawning away, but everybody kept talking. But anyway, that's the way that was. SP Futures up 12, Nance Futures up 102. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks. Thank you, guys. Nice job, Matt, as usual.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?